From the right, I'm Matt Lewis.
From the left, I'm Bill Scher.
And you're watching
The Week in Blog.
This week, Bill, Sharon Angle back in the news. Joe Scarborough versus Marcos Melitzis of the Daily Coast. But first, Michael Steele once again generating controversy, this time over his comments about Afghanistan. But interestingly, he could have actually spurred a actual real debate about foreign policy.
That's right. So he, at a Connecticut fundraiser last Thursday, called the war in Afghanistan a war of Obama's choosing, challenged Obama's intellect by saying he should have known not to get involved in a land war in Afghanistan, echoing the wise words of Vizzini and the Princess Bride. It was picked up by a Democratic Party tracker outside of a rope line at the Connecticut restaurant that he was speaking at. So he wasn't necessarily trying to make a grand foreign policy address. And that story was told by the Hartford Courant and for the print context that by Nancy Scola over at the blog Tech President. And I was struck today by, so obviously there was, you know, the DNC piled on, a lot of Republican defenders of the war piled on, Bill Kristol called for his resignation. But you're starting to see a bubbling up of commentary online saying that Michael Steele was right in regards to his policy points. Andrew Sullivan has been flogging this with a few Michael Steele was right posts. His most recent highlighted Ann Coulter making a similar point on her website at Human Events.
That's right. And this one could have real-world implications. She starts off by saying, Michael Steele was absolutely right. Afghanistan is Obama's war, and judging by other recent Democratic ventures in military affairs, isn't likely to turn out well. Bill, who knows? Ann Coulter doesn't have the same cachet that she once had. But look, this thing could turn interesting. It's ironic that Michael Steele has perhaps spawned a real intellectual debate on the right. But look, Barack Obama already has liberals who don't like the war in Afghanistan. And now if he loses conservatives, and Ann Coulter may be, look, we've always had George Will and Tony Blankley and others who have opposed it. But anecdotally speaking, I'm seeing others now who on Twitter and whatnot. I had a debate today on my podcast with Melissa Clothier. She's agreeing with Ann Coulter. A lot of people now, I think there's a chance that Obama could lose some conservatives. But you're right. It's not just Andrew Sullivan. David Korn at Politics Daily, my colleague, wrote, "The war in Afghanistan is President Obama's war and partly of the president's choosing. Sure, Obama inherited the conflict. Bush initiated the military action in Afghanistan after 9/11. And then veered into Iraq before the war in Afghanistan was resolved. Yet Obama, after much deliberation, decided to change the nature of the Afghanistan war." Essentially, this has spawned, and Michael Steele has interestingly spawned an argument that liberals and conservatives are both taking part in. But I think the real story here is the chance that Ann Coulter could be the beginning of a big movement of conservatives to start opposing the war in Afghanistan.
And Andrew Sullivan's point in highlighting Coulter's piece was to say maybe conservatism can make a comeback in the GOP after all, against Obama's insane notion of committing 100,000 troops to fight 500 terrorists, many of whom were recruited to fight the invaders. And of course, in a fight between Palin and Coulter, only one can make an actual argument. So just so everyone's got their head screwed on right, Andrew Sullivan, the conservative apostate who broke ranks to support Obama's election to the presidency and been dismissed by conservatives ever since, is now saying that he agrees with one of the most conservative of conservatives, Ann Coulter, against the war in Afghanistan and thinking we should
leave. Well, this, of course, is interesting because heretofore there's been sort of an unspoken agreement among conservatives that we would oppose Obama on domestic policy, big government stuff. We would criticize him when he showed weakness on foreign policy, but by and large, conservatives would support him. They would not play politics, but they would give him the same benefit of the doubt that they gave George W. Bush in terms of the war. And that has been sort of an unspoken rule. You've seen people like Bill Kristol, Lynn Cheney, even Red State's Eric Erickson, as an aside, called on Michael Steele to step down when he made these comments. I actually did too. But my concern with Steele is it's not the RNC chairman's job to be setting foreign policy. Look, I think this is a fine debate to have. I think debate's healthy. But the real concern is I think there's nothing inherently unconservative about opposing this. My concern is when people play politics. So if conservatives don't like this because it's bad policy, then fine, oppose it. But if you don't like this because it's Obama's war and because after 10 years of defending Bush and getting beaten up for it, you're saying, well, look, I got beat up for defending Bush for 10 years. I don't even like Obama. I've got no skin in the game anymore. I'm not going to get beat up for defending him. Then I do have a problem.
I imagine a fair amount of these people are folks who are saying we have to fight them over there as we don't fight them over here a few years ago.
It's hypocritical, I think, to if Bush were president and he were doing this, if he were surging in Afghanistan, and we don't know if he would have or not, but if he would have...
I can take a guess.
Do you think he would have?
There were plenty of times when many people said he should draw down in various places, and he always searched.
Right, but let me tell you the narrative now being developed. And maybe this is revisionist history, but the narrative is that Bush intentionally intentionally had a small footprint in Afghanistan because he knew you don't fight a land war there. That's why he went into Iraq. So Bush was actually brilliant, and Obama has ratcheted up the war in Afghanistan. Bush would have never done that. That's what the narrative is now. That's what Ann Coulter
and others are saying. That is a fascinating narrative.
Well, who knows? We don't know for sure. It, you know what? I don't remember Bush's team ever articulating that point at the time. But who knows? But in any event, this is interesting. Maybe this will go away. Maybe Ann Coulter doesn't have the juice that she used to have. But maybe this will... actually cause many conservatives to jump off the bandwagon. And if that happens, Obama doesn't have a lot of support for this politically, doesn't have a lot of cover. And that could have real-world implications, actually, on Afghanistan strategy.
So do we think that Michael Steele, he wasn't trying to make a big speech.
Right.
He was giving a very small speech that got caught on tape. But do you think he had in the back of his mind that there's an opportunity for the Republican Party to break on this whole subject of Afghanistan and repurpose their foreign policy, recover the whole foreign policy position? Was he trying? Is he on the leading edge of a new face of conservatism?
Well, it is interesting. I mean, it almost seems like after coalescing around a sort of I don't want to use the term neoconservative because it can be seen as derisive and dismissive, but it seems like the conservative movement and Republicans essentially mocked and dismissed the Ron Paul brand of politics. And it may be that it's coming back in vogue now for political convenient reasons. But look, it's funny. Michael Steele, about a year ago, after committing one of his many, many gaffes, said something humorous. He said, look, you guys think I'm committing gaffes, but everything I say, I'm saying on purpose. You just don't get how smart I am. I'm not crazy. I'm crazy like a fox.
He's playing three-dimensional chess.
Yeah. Now, look, I find that laughable. I think that Michael Steele, had no intention. I think that he was just sort of... I think he maybe got lucky, but either way, it's interesting that he has potentially spawned a real intellectual, substantive debate on the right about Afghanistan, which could be very, very healthy or destructive, depending on how it plays out. But it's a fascinating story, Bill, and we should definitely keep an eye on this as it moves on.
So in less worldly issues... But big in the blog world, a significant public fight has broken out between Marcos Melitzis And Joe Scarborough of MSNBC's Morning Joe, and maybe at this point it's more accurate to say Marcos versus all of MSNBC, because he has been at least temporarily banned from the entire network because of this argument that broke out on Twitter between Marcos and Joe Scarborough.
Right. So let's start at the beginning, and maybe you can help me piece this together. I think I know what happened. So, okay, Joe Scarborough, like a month or so ago, whenever the Joe Sestak thing happened, Scarborough basically took the same position I took, that it's ludicrous to think that that Joe Sestak wasn't offered a job. Clearly he was offered a job, because you wouldn't be tempted to step down or to abandon your Senate campaign for an unpaid honorary position that you're actually not allowed to have. So Joe was making that point. I think it angered Marcos at some point. He started pushing back against that on Twitter. Joe Scarborough on Twitter took umbrage to this and accused Marcos Melitzas of having accused Joe Scarborough of murder. Now, where does this come from? Apparently in like 2001, when Joe Scarborough was a member of Congress, a staffer of his, an intern I believe, died. And as far as I can tell, and maybe you'll know more about this than I do, but as far as I can piece together, apparently Marcos at some point said, look, you know, everybody went against Gary Condit and ruined his career and accused him of murder, and he was exonerated. What about Joe Scarborough? Am I right about that?
I don't know the exact phrasing that he used, but that is my understanding. And from Marcos's perspective, he was making a point about media double standards and not trying to argue that Joe Scarborough is actually a murderer.
Right. But now Joe, again, now I don't know enough to know if this is fair or not, but Joe took great offense to this and said that he believes that Marcos accused him of murder. And so they had a fight for all to see on Twitter. It was very visible, and it went back and forth like three or four times, each of them commenting. And so then I didn't hear anything more about it for, you know, it's been a month or two.
This is late May.
Yeah. I mean, so it's been a while. And so then I guess just the other day, Marcos wrote a piece at the Daily Kos saying that he has been banned from MSNBC, and apparently he has. He has a letter from MSNBC essentially confirming that he's been banned. So then the leftist sphere, the liberals on Twitter, really went after Joe yesterday as well. But apparently it is true that Marcos is banned from MSNBC because of this fight. Some of the liberals are going after the whole Morning Joe show, mocking it for having low ratings and whatnot. So my take on Morning Joe is, whether or not the ratings are good, everybody in D.C. watches it. It's a show where it can really influence public opinion because opinion leaders watch it. But in any event, it's interesting because MSNBC, of course, is perceived as being the network of the left, and here you have the number one, arguably the number one liberal blogger, banned from the network, at least temporarily.
Right, and it potentially could have some bit of a rift between, I mean, the liberal networks in general has been also very positive for MSNBC, particularly the primetime lineup of Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow. They've never taken to Scarborough.
Right. And will Maddow and Olbermann honor this ban? I mean, will Keith Olbermann allow the suits at MSNBC to dictate to him whether or not he can have on Marcos Melitzas indefinitely?
I don't know. As far as I know, there hasn't been any public response by them. Rachel's been in Afghanistan actually the last few days, so it's probably not top of mind for her right now. And I don't think Keith is a pretty active Twitterer. As also, as we talked about before, Keith walked out of Daily Kos a few weeks ago. Not because he was mad at Marcos, he was mad at some of the other diarists there. But he seemed to take it out on the entire community, saying they were accusing him of being disingenuous in his criticism of Barack Obama. Marcos' blog today, as a follow-up, saying that MSNBC tried to talk me out of going public with this between Phil Griffin, the person, the executive who had first said, please don't come on in the near future. But here's the thing. Neither Keith Olbermann or Ed Schultz reached out. That spoke volumes to me since they have my number. And I'm sure Griffin would have loved for them to intervene, but they didn't. What does that tell me? That they're fighting the good fight from the inside and have zero interest in doing Griffin's dirty work for him. They won't be able to comment on this for obvious reasons, but that does not mean they're not engaged. So Marcus is telling his community, don't take it out on Keith and don't take it out on Ed Schultz. They're trying to help me from the inside. And on top of that, Marcos highlighted Greg Sargent's post. He's blogging at the Washington Post. His blog is The Plumb Line. Quote, it's funny, I don't recall the chief of MSNBC publicly banning Liz Cheney from appearing on the network when she cut an entire web video publicly antagonizing Keith Olbermann and Chris Matthews for allegedly being too frightened to debate her about terrorism. Conservatives are expected to demonize the media. I can always count on being granted a platform by the same major networks they hammer publicly on a regular basis. It's all part of the game, get it? But it seems Marcos got publicly dressed down and banned by the president of the network, no less, because he got under Scarborough's skin with a few nasty little tweets. This has the potential of putting some distance between MSNBC and a lot of the network's fans, although that bond that Keith and Rachel and Ed have with their fans may be strong enough to withstand what the executives are doing, especially if Marcos is stepping in and saying, hey, don't take it out on them.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Marcos and Joe Scarborough were on Meet the Press not that long ago, and according to Marcos, they got along fine, and nothing was said in the green room, so that's interesting. I don't think Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think Joe has responded to this. Marcos was really going after him on Twitter yesterday. I don't think Joe has even addressed this at all.
Not to my knowledge. It's hard to keep up with Twitter all the time. But.
Right, it's hard to keep up, and of course, Morning Joe, but I've not, maybe someone can comment and tell us if we're wrong, but the other thing is that because conservatives are in the minority in the mainstream media, in some cases they do get benefits because MSNBC is dominated by liberals, and the one conservative who is doing reasonably well there, I would say very well, but if you want to talk ratings, who's doing reasonably well there is Joe Scarborough. So in a sense, he actually gets more latitude because he's like the only conservative there. It's counterintuitive, but I think that liberals kind of object to that. But in a sense, when liberals dominate, when they're the majority in the mainstream media, sometimes it means that conservatives get preferential treatment in an ironic sense. You get what I'm saying there, Bill?
I do.
I'm not saying it well.
unrelated, just looking at Joe's Twitter feed, he does say, thank you, Ann Coulter. She speaks out against the GOP now being for permanent war. She is right.
Interesting.
So, Joe Scarborough on the conservative anti-Afghan war bandwagon.
Good to know. Very good to know, because I'm writing
about this. I'm sure Ann will be on the show soon enough.
Yeah. All right, so I guess the last topic for us to discuss here today is Sharon Angle, the gift that keeps on giving.
So Sharon Angle, I'd say the most Tea Party-ist of all the Republican primary winners out there. Would you dispute that?
She's very Tea Party-ish. I mean, Rand Paul's Tea Party-ish. But she's very.
I know Rand Paul says he's of the Tea Party, but he is of this isolationist view on the Afghan war, and I would bet that is not fully shared by everyone in the Tea Party.
Yeah, I mean, I think, if you look up Tea Party, sure, her picture could be there. The dictionary.
So she, her website during the primary was. Lay it all out. It had all of her policy positions. no matter how much they were in or out of the mainstream, you know, abolish the Department of Education, U.S. out of the U.N., you know, all the real hardcore conservative stuff. And after she won, that website disappeared. And a more professionally designed, you know, fewer typos and less detail of policy positions appeared. And the Reid campaign, you know, she's running against Harry Reid in Nevada. This was going to be a marquee Senate race because Harry Reid's numbers have been so poor. A lot of Republicans thought this was going to be a very dramatic pickup for them, and now there's more concern about it because Engel is not seen as viable a statewide candidate. Reid archived Sharon Engel's website, put it up under the URL, The Real Sharon Engel. It initially included a fundraising link to the Reid campaign. The Engel law team sent them a cease and desist letter. The Reid campaign quietly acknowledged that and took down the fundraising link, but left the website, therealsharonengel.com, with all the policy positions. I mean, it even has a giant banner at the top saying, vote for Sharon Engel. So it's not obvious that the Reid campaign is even behind it. And it's just sitting there as, you know, here's what her actual policy positions are. And Sharon Engel is indicating that she still wants to sue over copyright infringement. Steve Bennett at the Washington Monthly talked about this. Engel's lawyers threatened a lawsuit claiming that showing voters what Engel said she believes would represent misuse of copyrighted materials. As of Monday, Reid's team backed off. After they took it temporarily, they put it back on. The issue seemed to be over various fill-in boxes and sign-up fields on the original Engel website. When the Reid kit republished the site, the fields were still active. Now the content is still there, but the boxes are inactive. In her press release, the Reid campaign didn't sound too worried about litigation. It's unclear if Engel team intends to still pursue it, but Reid and his aides seem to be pleased. By throwing a fit, Engel has created more negative publicity for herself, brought more attention to her extremist beliefs. If she files suit, Reid benefits with more coverage of Engel trying to hide her own published positions. If she doesn't, Reid benefits by his positions in public view. So it befuddles me why the Engel campaign would go out of its way to highlight this spat. You know, campaigns put up attack websites all the time. I doubt many of them actually even get a lot of traction. If she just was quiet about it, you know, no one would even know what the URL was. And now that it's a point of conflict, it's a more of a chance of the Reid campaign to keep mentioning it.
I mean, absolutely, Bill. I'm going to take off my ideological hat and just put on my political analyst hat. This is an example of Sharon Engel not being ready for prime time. This is just a very bad tactical move. So on a campaign, you know, you're sitting there and someone comes in and says, hey, guess what? Harry Reid, took our website that we took down, you know, and he's took the cached version and he put it up and, what should we do? And then you sort of go through, well, here's what we could do. Could sue him for copyright infringement, but can't really do that. That would draw attention to it. And you go through these things, and any professional political advisor worth his salt would very quickly determine we should probably just ignore this because we don't want to call more attention to it. We really don't have a strong argument. So how would it look if there were a news story saying that we are objecting to someone posting our own positions that we ourselves in. So, you know, very quickly, a good political advisor or consultant would rule out suing Harry Reid over posting this. And yet they haven't. This is a complete rookie maneuver. It has nothing to do with ideology. It has everything to do with competence and experience. And if Harry Reid wins, it's going to be because of stuff like this. And the argument against, you know, if you argue against Sharon Engel, it's because you're a liberal or a rhino. But the legitimate argument against Sharon Engel, as far as I'm concerned, is stuff like this. And I'm talking about in the primary. the legitimate argument, I believe, against her, because she was philosophically the best conservative, no doubt about it. But the best argument against her always was, in my estimation, that she's going to do stuff like this. She's not going to run smart, competent campaigns, and this is just absolutely, utterly ridiculous.
If she goes down, if she blows what I'm sure a lot of Republicans thought would be an easy pickup seat.
Yeah.
She didn't just win on the ragtag grassroots energy of the Tea Party. She got a ton of money from the Club for Growth.
Yes, they came in. They came in late, and supported her. And I think if we were to look back at what they did, I think you'll find that they didn't give her money. They ran like IE campaigns on her behalf, probably ensuring that the ads would be done correctly. Here's the deal, Bill.
Will there be blowback on Club for Growth if she falls apart?
I think that it doesn't make them look good. It doesn't help them. That's for sure. But look, I think that the problem is that when you oppose candidates. Or even if you show a certain amount of skepticism toward them, you can be perceived as a rhino or a squish. And I think that if Sharon Engel goes down, the wrong interpretation would be she was too conservative, because that's not why she'll go down. It's got nothing to do with her political philosophy. If Sharon Engel goes down, if she doesn't pick up this seat, it will have everything to do with competence. And I think that when groups endorse candidates and decide who they're going to support, who they're going to back, I completely agree with looking at their, stances, their vote record. Are they solid philosophically? I completely agree with that. But you've also got to look at their competence. Can they run a good campaign? Do they say crazy stuff? Can they stay on message? And unfortunately, and I think this is probably true on both sides of the political spectrum, sometimes the candidates who are the most philosophically sound are not the best campaigners. So it's an issue.
Are there any conservative bloggers expressing consternation about this? Or are they standing up for her? Or are they just taking a pattern saying, there's other things to talk about, let's just close our eyes and let this one play out on its own?
Man, I don't want to say that nobody's talking about it, because I don't, now that Blogometer's gone, God rest its soul, I can't monitor the blogs as I used to, as easily as I used to, but I am monitoring them, and I'm on Twitter, and maybe somebody's writing about it, but I've basically seen conservatives just not address this issue. There's really not a lot to be gained from doing it, if you really think about it. I mean,
is there a candidate now that a lot of primaries have happened? Is there a race that conservative bloggers are saying, this is the one we're most thrilled about, this one was worth most of our energy?
Good question.
I don't want to put you on, if I'm putting you on the spot, maybe save it for a future segment.
Well, I just have to give it some thought. I think clearly Marco Rubio was that candidate, and he may again become that candidate, but things have become complicated in Florida. Because of BP and because of Charlie Crist's decision to leave the primary. So that's a very good question. I'd have to give it some thought. But right now, I don't know that there is one specific candidate that they're coalescing around more than others. I mean, part of it's that we're just at a sort of a weird downtime. I mean, Ken Buck in Colorado is the conservative favorite out there. Conservatives are sort of on the sidelines. Most conservative bloggers probably are backing J.D. Hayworth, but you've got the National Review who endorsed McCain. So that's an interesting one. But I think as we gear up toward November, you'll start to see whether it's Rand Paul or Sharon Engel or Marco Rubio or Pat Toomey, there will be some sort of profile race, top tier campaigns that you'll see get a lot more attention.
All right. Perhaps we should leave it there.
I think so, my friend. Good talking with you. And
always good to talk to you. We missed you last week, but Peter Sitterman was exceptional in your absence.
Excellent. Excellent.
Well, and I'll be gone next week. So try not to suffer too much.
Yes. Do we have any idea who will be filling in?
It's a total mystery.
Okay. Well, so send in your resumes, people. Email, tweet. You know, let us know if you're open to filling in for a bit. It's big shoes to fill. So. Well, thanks, Bill. And
have a good week.
You too. Check us out on Twitter at The Weekend Blog, on Facebook / The Weekend Blog, and we'll see. We won't see you, Bill, but we'll see the rest of you next week on The Weekend Blog.
Take care.